We're not the only country. Many have already done it, but Canada is also getting ready to follow our lead and become the next country to make the controversial change. From next Thursday, Australians will need a prescription to buy painkillers like Panadeine and Nurofen Plus, low-dose codeine products. The change comes after the Therapeutic Goods Administration, the TGA, found that restricting access to codeine-based drugs would reduce addiction and deadly overdoses. But it's a divisive decision, and one which is set up for debate in Canada right now. Dr. David Yerlink is a drug and medication safety expert. He's a senior scientist at the Institute for Clinical Evaluation Sciences in Toronto. David Yerlink, welcome to RN Breakfast.
Good morning, Fran.
So where are things at right now in Canada? Can people buy low-dose codeine medications over the counter right now?
They can in all but one of our provinces. Manitoba, a year or two ago, decided to put it behind the counter. The federal government here just recently concluded a period of public consultation. What the result of that will be, I don't know, but I would imagine that sometime later this year, the results will be released. And I don't really see how they have any, honestly, any reason not to put it behind the counter.
Why is that? Why do you support that move?
Well, it's, of course, the sort of thing, as you alluded to in the opening, that's going to be opposed by some people. But from a societal health perspective, it's a no-brainer for a couple of reasons. First is that codeine doesn't work very well. People don't, I think, appreciate this element of codeine. So codeine itself is not a pain reliever. It has to be converted to morphine by the liver. And that process varies a lot from person to person. But with the amounts of codeine that you can take at standard doses in these tablets, these low-dose tablets, the average person gets essentially no morphine, maybe a milligram or at most two. The data that this combination, whether it's codeine and paracetamol or codeine and ibuprofen or codeine and ASA, the evidence that that's better than what we already have is non-existent.
Now, can I just interrupt you there? I'm sorry, David, but
sure.
we had a fairly high-level debate around this here on the program this week with the chief medical officer and also Peter Carroll, the head of pharmacology at one of our universities, and he was arguing against your position. We got a lot of contact from our listeners who said, you know, one said, I have fibromyalgia, the low codeine medication I take over the counter is the only thing that addresses it. Another, many women said, I get period pain. This is the only thing that knocks it off.
Mm-hmm. Well, I, as I said earlier, I appreciate that some people want the access to codeine, but if they knew what the codeine was actually doing in their bodies, if they knew it was being converted to a tiny amount of morphine, they might be a little less keen to take it. And I suppose the question is, for someone who's taking two of these tablets, let's say 16 milligrams of codeine, mm-hmm. almost no morphine at all, how much of the analgesia that they're describing, how much of the pain relief that they're describing comes from the tiny amount of morphine versus the ibuprofen or paracetamol itself?
Yeah, but presumably they've tried other things and keep coming back to this. I mean, otherwise, why would they keep going with it?
Well, so let's say for the sake of argument that there is a subset of people, subset of the population out there who do derive meaningful benefits from non-prescription codeine. And I don't discount the possibility that someone by virtue of their genetics might turn codeine into morphine very efficiently and derive some benefit from it. I think you want to look at it from a societal perspective. I mean, there are all kinds of people who, hundreds of thousands in Australia alone every year, who misuse codeine products and they are harmed either through addiction to codeine or progression to other drugs like oxycodone or even heroin or by the drugs that codeine is packaged with.
I mean, let's go to that, because that's a key part of this element, that, you know, it is being misused and people are getting addicted to it and some are even dying from it. But again, to quote Peter Carroll, who is the head of pharmacology at the University of Notre Dame this week, he says the vast majority of people use low-dose codeine safely and appropriately for acute pain. I mean, that is true, but what are the statistics in Canada showing you in terms of use or misuse or overuse?
I am ashamed to tell you that we don't have good statistics on that in Canada. We've never collected good statistics on the harms that befall people from opioid use. But I mean, I can tell you, I have no shortage in my own clinical experience of looking after people who come to hospital with paracetamol toxicity in a liver that's damaged, or very, very sick patients with salicylic aspirin poisoning.
From low-dose codeine products?
Well, if they were taking it as they should, they wouldn't have had this happen. But what we see is people who will take 30, 40, 50 tablets a day to get more of the codeine. Mm-hmm. And so that's the subset of people who are using it, who are clearly addicted and are harming themselves despite ongoing use. And they don't need codeine. They need access to help. But think about the 16-year-old or 17-year-old who, you know, has access to this drug that comes directly from the opium poppy and experiments with it and likes how it makes them feel. That's the sort of person who, you know, could easily get into long-term trouble with the use of codeine and progress to something more serious.
And just one final point, and Health Canada acknowledges this, that the prescription-only move could place a greater burden on the healthcare system. In other words, more patients going to GPs, and that has an implication for getting in to see your GP and the health system more broadly. But it also makes the point that there is a benefit, perhaps, to getting people into a health system where their complaints, where their problems are looked at more broadly. What's your view on this?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, I was a pharmacist myself for 5 years, and this was back in the early 90s. I was routinely advocating the use of codeine because I thought I was helping people. If I knew then what I know now about this drug and its toxicities, its highly variable response from person to person, I would never advocate it. And I think it's a no-brainer for your country to take it off and put it not just behind the counter, but make it a prescription-only drug.
David Yearling, thank you very much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Dr. David Yearling is a drug and medication safety expert, senior scientist at the Institute for Clinical Evaluative Sciences in Toronto. And next Thursday in this country, the 1st of February, painkillers containing codeine, low-dose codeine like Panadeine and Nurofen Plus, will no longer be sold over the counter at the pharmacy.